This is the Watson Weekly. I'm Rick Watson, back with another interview. Helen Lowe was 65 years old when she started Lowe & Sons. She had a problem. Her bags didn't meet her style standards for how she actually traveled. So she built a company to fix it. Her sons joined, and the brand grew. Today, it's an eight-figure direct-to-consumer business, 90% D2C, 10% Amazon, no department store distribution, no wholesale safety net. Katie Olmsted is the president running the operating side of that business through some of the most hostile conditions D2C has ever seen. Paid media costs are rising, customer acquisition costs are up, and a competitive problem that keeps getting worse. Lowe & Sons designs are so good, they get duped fast. Their Catalina Deluxe Weekender bag is now one of the most duplicated designs in e-commerce, and new products can go from debut to knockoff in under a year. Lowe & Sons used to run a two-year product development cycle. They've cut it to 9 months. They're now testing a process to go from idea to sellable in 4 to 5 months. That's not an incremental optimization. That's a different operating model. We're also joined today by Sonal Gandhi, Chief Content Officer of The Lead, a commerce summit happening in New York City on May 20th and 21st. Katie is also speaking there. The Lead is where brand operators go to compare notes without the vendor spin. If you're running a brand or investing in one, it's worth your attention. Today, we're going to cover how Lowe & Sons competes without a wholesale channel, how Katie thinks about the levers of brand growth, and what it actually takes to use AI to compress a product calendar. Let's get into it. Thanks again for joining us. I'm here with Katie Olmsted, the president of Lowe & Sung, and Sonal Gandhi, the chief content officer at The Lead. Would love to jump into the conversation with you, Katie. Such an interesting founding story of Lowe & Sons and the decisions that what they made to focus on and things they made to not focus on, meaning sort of like wholesale, retail, purely D2C. Can you talk about the founding story of Lowe & Sons?
Yeah, for sure. So for those unfamiliar, Lowe & Sons, we sell travel and lifestyle bags for really multidimensional women who live life on the go, love to travel, that kind of thing. And so the way that the brand initially started was by Helen Lowe, who was our initial founder. She was 65 at the time, had just retired after having quite an impressive and long, illustrious career, and found herself, therefore, you know, with time on her hands. And she started traveling really extensively with her husband, who himself was a very distinguished astronomer. And so he would travel the world constantly. And in going with him, she really had to find a bag that kept up and could keep pace with these travels. And she had a really hard time finding one that had functional features that she really needed, but also the look and style and aesthetic that she was going for. And she really couldn't find, she could find one or the other, but not both. And so she really ended up just saying, I'm going to make one as my own. And she really recruited her sons in to help her, Jan and Derek. And so hence the name Lowe & Sons. It's truly the Lowe family, started by Helen, and joining in with her two sons. So really, really great founding story. You know, I think in terms of, you know, it's really driven a lot of how we operate today. You know, we, I think, really are dedicated to problem-solving products. So similar to how Helen couldn't find this bag that did both function and style, you know, we always design new products, anything we bring to market around a core customer need that, you know, we're solving. I think also when you have your name on the door, like the Lowe's do, there's this kind of standard of quality that you don't let go of. And that's a really core foundational operational pillar that we stand by even today. And I would say the last thing is really just the customer centricity of it all. You know, Helen was customer one, and I think she and the brothers, myself, our entire team are still extremely close to the customer. It's been, I think, kind of a competitive advantage of ours of how deeply connected we are with them, and the community is incredible, and just really staying true to what they need and what they want from us. So really cool founding story that I think really rings true to how we operate today. And in terms of kind of how we've operated in just staying DTC. I think that's been very intentional. I think that third piece of being customer focused is kind of why every e-commerce, probably every operator out there knows that DTC is where you can really own all elements of your customer journey and how your brand shows up. And so I think that obsession with the customer and the closeness, being close to them, is really why we've stayed DTC as long as we have. But of course, there's always the interest in looking at other channels. But to date, that's really anchored us into staying DTC.
Yeah. And I think the idea that you said something very simple, but profound at the same time, it's always been a problem solving brand. So many brands out there don't and can't answer such a simple question as like what problem you're solving for this customer. And it just seems like the intentionality behind that is something I don't often see. So even just that, where does that come from?
I truly think it comes from, you know, the family and from Helen herself. You know, she had that initial problem, and it's just how she thinks. And I think how her, therefore Jan and Derek, her sons, have been trained to think. You know, the business was started in 2010. So it's been around a long time, kind of a testament to always evolving and always trying to solve those problems for customers. And, you know, I think they just have that founder entrepreneurial mindset where they're trying to fix something. They see an opportunity to make something better, and they go try to design it and do it. So I think I really think the founding story, and I think it comes from them three as kind of leaders and faces of the brand. You know, our whole team takes from that, and myself included, you know, always is looking around for inspo and trying to find the next problem to solve out in the world, which I know we'll get into, you know, some product development stuff later on, but it really drives the start of the product development process for us.
Yeah. And that product development process, and it seems like there's been an early collaboration with the lead itself. I remember going to the lead a couple of years ago and seeing one of the, I think the speaker gifts, Ramani Sonal was a Lone Sons bag, which is like, this is like a full circle moment for me putting that together.
Well, I mean, honestly, I feel like a lot of brands do, you know, gifting and partnerships and collaborations. That's a big one for us because we're so community centric. And, you know, I mentioned our target customer is this like multidimensional woman who oftentimes is a working professional, but also a mom, a traveler, someone with a lot of hobbies.
Yeah, yeah.
And so working with the folks at the lead has been great because a lot of them are women. A lot of them are these working women who are really multidimensional. You know, I know a lot of them have come up to me just on their own and said, "Hey, I have your bag. I love it." Just what we love to see and like to continue to have our bags in people's hands like that.
Yeah, we had Lone Sons on our foremost 50 list a few years ago, and that's how that started. But that's right. A lot of our speakers are women. Not intentional. That's just who's running brands right now.
I know. It's really great.
So that worked out really well for us. I have a few myself.
Yeah. And with high quality bags comes, you know, sometimes the opposite problem. What you want is that people don't want to give them up. They don't want to replace them. Does that cause a problem for you, Katie?
It does. You know, what's funny, it's a good problem, but it's still a challenge we operate around. So, you know, one of our most common comments that we see in social media, Reddit, reviews, you name it, is that, you know, "I've had your bag for 5 years and it's still in great shape," or "I've had Lone Sons bags for 10 years and it's still, you know, like looks new." And, you know, it's incredible to see. And there's such great positive to that. And, you know, the quality speaking for itself and the positive, you know, customer feedback and experience and loyalty. But it does create a little bit of a retention problem because, you know, people that have bags that are lasting 5 to 10 years aren't buying as frequently, right? And so any great brand has a core pillar of existing customers who are coming back to buy again and again. So it just creates an added challenge for us of how do we get those folks who had a great experience with our bag, and that bag's going to be around for a long time, to come back and shop with us somewhere else. So there's a lot that we do, you know, to get back in front of those existing customers, whether it's cross-selling and explaining, "Hey, your use case can be extended to this other product. You know, if you're buying a weekender bag to travel, hey, like, look at these great crossbody bags that you might want to bop around the city you're visiting, you know, when you leave your weekender bag in the hotel room." So we do obviously that cross-selling. We do a lot of listening to the customer to see what other colors, what other hardware, what other, you know, variations of our existing products they want to see. And we try to really design around that and keep solving for them.
It's a great point to start solving other problems for the same demographic. A lot of brands, and we just saw, unfortunately, like in the last several years, you know, the decline of Allbirds as it tried to break out of its kind of niche lane. It, you know, I tried 2, 3, 4, 5 things and none of them really hit. You know, they branched out into stores and, you know, are there enough SKUs to support the stores? Like, you, D2C only definitely sidesteps that kind of, you know, problem, and then it creates kind of its own awareness problem too.
Yes.
It seems like, you know, we're in this sort of dupe driven culture, you know, where like the idea of dupes itself, it's a consumer meme at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And it's your Weekender bag is one of the most duped bags on the planet, which kind of, again, creates its own problem and opportunity. It's flattering and crappy, right? It's, you know what I mean?
Yes. Right? Yes.
Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. Dupes are tough. Dupes are really hard. For better or for worse, we are a frequently duped brand. Mm. I think in some ways it's a testament to our products and our design, and makes us feel good that we have products that are good enough to dupe, well enough to dupe. But yeah, it's super challenging. I mean, there's true like damage that gets done. You know, of course, the most obvious piece is sales. You know, when you have a great product and then a competitor comes out with a dupe that they've made for a fraction of the cost, and therefore they can price it at a fraction of the price. You know, there's a lot of price sensitive customers out there, and a blessing and a curse of e-commerce is an image can look really great, right? But the quality and the construction is tough to discern online. And so our product might look very similar to the dupe that's half off or, you know, 30% of the price. So it's really challenging to lose sales there just to that, you know, company that didn't spend the time talking to the customer and developing the product and having the creativity to come up with the style in the first place. So the sales piece is definitely tough. I think dupes are also really tough from a time perspective. You know, it really narrows the window of how long you get your product on your own, right? These days, we'll launch a product and we'll see a dupe on the market in less than 12 months. So it really shortens the window for when we can drive the sales and be the only one with that style on the market, you know? So compressing the timeline for how quickly we can innovate is really important. I think the third thing that people don't really know or talk about as much when it comes to the dupe culture is the perception problem. So for us—
Talk about that. What do you mean by the perception problem?
Yeah. So, you know, for us, we've been around since 2010. You mentioned our Catalina Deluxe is our Weekender bag that really originated the bottom shoe compartment. We're the first brand to do it. I have seen it, you know, there's so many stories about coming up with that concept as a bottom pocket for your shoes or dirty laundry, that kind of thing. And that's probably the most duped bag out there these days. Every Amazon manufacturer sells it. It feels like every travel or bag brand does it as well. And we've seen a lot, unfortunately, in our comments and reviews and all those kinds of things, or you know, Reddit, social media, et cetera.
Right.
We'll see, hey, like this Lowenson's bag is a dupe of that other brand's bag. And in reality, it was the flip,
right?
Because some of these other brands have more marketing spend, they're buzzier, you know, people are following them and they'll launch a new product like it's brand new and it's never been done before. And in reality, we designed that original product before that new brand even was in existence.
Right.
So it creates this perception challenge for us where we're getting pinned as the duper when in reality we were the originator. And so there's really a delicate balance of how you address that. You of course never want to say, no, you're wrong, you know, it was us first.
Right.
But you know, we've had to be creative around how we message that and making sure there is enough points where we say, hey, that was our, you know, we're the originator of this idea, or this was the original product, you know. It's been kind of fun to test it. Like one of our top performing ads right now, I think the messaging is like the most duped Weekender in the world, you know, and that that I think communicates the message without being so explicit.
Right.
So,
yeah. Kind of, right. Hints at the problem without, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Hitting them over the head with it.
Yeah.
Which kind of, you mentioned kind of that idea of the calendar. And I think, you know, in the fashion industry broadly, that's, it's a problem I see playing out, you know, because usually you have your core, you know, these are the things that aren't going to change for a while. Maybe there's small updates. And then you have fashions like seasonal, you know, things that need to hit the market. And if those seasonal items take 2 years to develop, those trends are hard to keep on top of. And so I feel like there are other parts of lifestyle and apparel that have the same problem. How do you think about your calendar? Where did you start, I guess, being a small, you know, a relatively small family brand when you started your journey? And where are you now in terms of your product development life cycle?
Yeah, it's probably one of the biggest updates we've made over the years. I think once upon a time in the probably first 10 years of brand, the cycle of developing a new product from idea to actually getting the product sellable was almost 2 years. So it was really long. And I think that was done intentionally because of all the thought that was put into that process between the rounds of feedback with customers on the idea phase, on the sampling phase. You know, there was a lot of time spent with the factory, like getting every single detail 100% perfect. But, you know, in today's day and age, the two-year calendar just doesn't allow you to compete. It's just, right. You can't take that amount of time and, you know, have the expenses that come with that. And so, you know, we've really sped up the process and now we're working on more like a 9-month calendar. So taking out more than half the time. And I think we've done that in a couple of ways. I think the first is just changing the way of thinking. Like it took a big leap to say, hey, we've done it this way before. That's led to a lot of success for us. The products have been great. We've gotten great feedback, but we're going to change it. Like nothing's wrong, but we just need to be faster. We need to change it for our own purpose. That was a tough, like thinking redesign before the process redesign even started. So we had to get comfortable taking risk and moving faster and just making quicker decisions. But in terms of like the process, you know, I think in terms of the rounds of feedback I mentioned, we've tightened them. So streamlined from maybe 4 or 5 rounds to 2. And we've also sort of pressed fast forward on those rounds. So instead of saying, hey, take this sample, go live your life in it for a couple of weeks, go on a trip, you know, get back to us, let us know what you think and any feedback. We're now saying, hey, come over, come look at this bag, walk around the apartment with it, you know, stuff it, test it, like throw it, you know, whatever, and get that feedback really fast, or maybe take it for a weekend, but not, you know, the
extended. That we did before.
So I think there's just a bit of urgency and, you know, just like I said, pressing fast forward on some of the stuff that we did before. This is obviously in product development, a huge place where we've used AI to get faster. So, you know, we go, instead of taking weeks, if not months, to go from an idea to an actual concept that we could show a designer, or tech pack creator, or even a factory, that process has now come down to like even an hour. You know, we're using tools now. This is what's so great about AI. It's a blend. It's obviously, it's part AI, part human, but the process has been able to get so much faster so that we can get from lots and lots of ideas to lots and lots of concepts to pressure test them amongst our team, our product development people, our designers, our marketers. We also are testing it with customers to narrow down, okay, these are the ideas we want to go forward with. And we've gotten there in a matter of hours or a day instead of weeks or a month. And so just two kind of examples of where we've really sped up the process and gotten to that 9-month timeframe to compete with the dupes and to keep pace with trends and to really meet the customer where they are and when they expect newness.
Yeah. And now, as I was mentioning before, there are a number of different parts of fashion that are experiencing the same question. Sonal, I know if your work with the lead, there are a number of other speakers and list members that are on the same journey. Can you speak about that for a minute?
Brands have unique challenges when it comes to AI than, you know, big retail. And sometimes there's so much noise out there that can sort of stop you in your tracks from doing anything. So I think what we're seeing is people are having, you know, conversations about what are the use cases that are applicable to me today that I can get something out of, make it clear for me, make it sort of tangible. And I think that's what we're seeing brands are eager to do. Like, what works and what do I need to invest in right now versus all of the noise that's out there about AI that is somewhat scary.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, one of the brands we were chatting before, Stitch Fix, you know, they're leveraging AI. Are there any relevant data or anecdotes from their journey that you think we could bring up here?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they're somewhat unique because they collect a lot of data. They definitely have more data than almost anyone else. And it's all zero party data as we speak. So they're able to utilize that. But I think that even with what other brands have, a lot of D2C brands have a lot of data on how users consuming their products. Mm. There are tons of use cases, especially around the supply chain. And wherever there is pressure, right? You've pressure from dupes, but there's also margin pressure on the supply chain. There's also just trends go in and out all the time. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very smart about consumer demand and how you plan towards it. And I think that's where you're going to see AI becoming easy a decision to make.
Yeah.
You know, adopting AI. It's like, this is where things are breaking. I need to fix it. And I need to fix it with some technology that can help me.
Yeah. So. You mentioned something, Sonal, that I think I would love to give back to Katie about being smart about where you use AI, which means like that intentionality. Are there areas that you've found where it's more helpful than other places? And I guess, how do you help other founders and brand leaders decide this is a good area? Like, what questions should they be asking themselves to understand? Like, it can be helpful here, it can't be helpful there.
Yeah. It's a good question. You know, we, as a, you know, smaller brand that can move faster and just test a lot, we're basically testing everywhere. You know, I think we have to be fast. We have to be a first mover on AI to compete. And so it's been kind of fun. You know, there's like no choice but to try everything. So, you know, of course, we're using ChatGPT and Perplexity and Claude Cowork, mm-hmm. and oftentimes using all three at the same time to say, hey, what's the collective answer here? Am I getting the same response? You know, that's one way we're testing all the different kind of go-to platforms at the same time. But we see it move the needle in a lot of places already. You know, I mentioned how fast we're able to get from idea to visual concepts. And when I say visual mm-hmm. concepts, I mean, we could come up with an idea. Like, this has truly, and a good example, my founder CEO, Derek, one of the Lows, he, and all the Lows are incredible at this, just coming up with ideas.
Yeah.
Like, what could we do? You know, he was eating dinner one night and saw the packaging, his dinner came in, and had a product idea. And so we went from that idea to a fully baked concept, including like a 360 degree view of it, how it would actually be constructed, and on model photography within an hour.
Wow.
And so it really helps move the needle in that idea to visual concepts phase. Similarly, it really helps on content creative. I think anybody playing the game on Meta these days and other digital ad platforms knows you have to scale creative. You have to test a lot of creative.
Yeah.
And AI has been so helpful in scaling that in a cost-effective way. You know, you can go from one creative to 100 versions of it in 2 seconds.
Right.
You know, you can turn a photo into a video or a stop motion. You can do so much on the content side. I think it's a balance on any of these things where you're heavily mm-hmm. moving the needle with AI to still make sure there's that human component, the art to the science, to make
it
makes sense. But it's moving the needle a lot. I would say too, you know, Sonal mentioned like how it's incorporated into the supply chain. And for us, that comes into play a little bit with inventory replenishment. And we use a really great AI tool called Fleaver, where we do all of our sales forecasting, our inventory management, our replenishment transfer orders. You know, we're heavily utilizing AI and modeling there to better inform our decisions on what we go buy, what we send where, you know. So it's moving the needle a lot of places, but you definitely need to have that human component, just making sure it all makes sense, making sure the concept that you've designed is actually manufacturable, making sure the creative that you've designed with AI doesn't look wacky. You know, we designed something recently and we had like a woman riding a bike and her feet were facing backwards. You know, like there's just obvious things that it won't get quite right sometimes that mm-hmm. you need to step in and correct. But it's been so helpful in a lot of ways. And brands like us, you know, we're just testing it constantly in every part of our business and seeing, okay, that was worthwhile, that was not. And so in terms of brand founders and other leaders, we're just talking all the time. You know, I'm lucky I have a good network at this point between physical friends and industry friends. And we're all just kind of pinging, hey, do you have anything for this? What are you using for that? You know, every time we get together, it's kind of fun to talk shop about what's working, what's not. And, you know, I think everybody learns from everybody else. So it's just this kind of fun environment of figuring it out.
Yeah, I think that's a natural place to talk about you, Sonal, we have a big event coming up in May in New York. Katie's a speaker. Anyone who loves this conversation, first of all, you need to come in person, not virtually, to see Katie there. You're covering the intersection of AI and brands in a big way. And I think in a way that a lot of events don't focus on the brand angle quite as much. What's new this year? Tell us what's in store for us. Like, if you can give us a preview, maybe.
Yeah. So first, Katie is going to be talking about, you know, what some of the younger brands that don't have the giant budgets of Walmart, you know, can do to you know, use AI effectively now. We also have, you know, some of the legacy brands like Columbia Sportswear talking about how to move from this, you know, experimentation and testing to actually getting operationalizing AI. So we're, you know, again, from a legacy brand perspective, but similar conversation. I think we're also going to be talking about some of these leading brands that are now testing on AI transactions on some of these tools. So we have someone from Steve Madden talking about how that's going. Obviously, we're going to be talking about agentic discovery. But I think some of the key elements that I think of is AI implementation is about technology, but it's also about people. And I want to have those conversations as well. One, sort of how do you bring your teams along? How do you inspire them? And then how do you protect your own career in the age of AI, right? It's easy to say, oh, you're going to be replaced with someone who's AI, that cliche. But I think what is truly you can do with AI or in general to promote your career. So we want to have those type of conversations for people that are attending the summit. And finally, I think there are some things that we're seeing on the edges that are really interesting. On we have the CEO of Minted, who has a new AI brand that's consumer-facing AI. And so we're going to be having her sort of showcase what that is, like how are brands using AI as a consumer-facing tool. All about brands and AI, but, you know, different ways.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. And I'm definitely looking forward to being there. I'll be speaking there. So we're definitely encouraging everyone to come. I've spoken there the last few years, so I'm a big fan of the lead. And I've gotten a lot out of the event, and it's close. So that's also super nice, being in New York City. So kind of last question is, like, 24 months, 9 months, is there a bottom to that, Katie? You're like, how low can you go is maybe the question. And is it sustainable?
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. You know, we started at almost 2 years. We're now down to 9 months. We're actually testing a process now of whether we can bring something to market in more like 4 to 5 months. Mm. It's testing. Huge, huge caveat is that we're testing and it's not proven yet. And there's a lot of differences in how you run that process versus a classic process. But, you know, we're trying to see how fast we can get, you know, in that test of 4 or 5 months, we just have to think differently. You know, we're testing that process with like a limited edition, lower supply. Mm-hmm. You know, the big question is, can we do it that fast without sacrificing the quality that's so important to us and get an end product that people really love? And then if we do, and we've only done a small, you know, run of it, are we able to capture any positive marketing momentum and interest fast enough? Right. You know, so there's so much to test and try. So I think, you know, I think there is a bottom. You know, I think I don't think you can do it in 2 months. You know, there's certain things that sound sexy and interesting, and but I think are just impractical because you end up having to take too many shortcuts and you lose, you know, the really critical elements. You do need some customer feedback. You do need some production quality and assessment there. So I think there's a bottom, but I think there's also now, like, in a world, the world that we're going to in the next 1, 2, 3 years is probably not a 12 plus month development cycle for the guys like us, the ones who are trying to be the innovators, the disruptors, the buzzy ones. It might be possible for the bigger brands who have big teams and can phase their product development with just more funding and more money. But for the guys like us, you know, I think a sweet spot is probably around 6 months or less. You know, and being able to be fast but flexible, being able to consistently deliver high quality new product styles in under 6 months to beat the dupes and to keep up with consumer pace and the trends and what customers want from you. I think that's going to be a really big sweet spot. And the brands that win will be able to do that, move that fast and be consistent in doing that speed while maintaining customer closeness and quality.
Hey, first of all, it's really inspiring. So thank you.
And we'll see. Still tested. Who knows? We might find 9 months is the fastest we can do it, but we're trying.
Even 24-9 is super inspiring. And I would say the brand itself, how you guys do business, how you think about the world is super inspiring. So for sure, thank you. And Sonal, for those who may have heard about The Lead, but they haven't made the leap to attend in the past, like where do they find out more? How do they learn?
Yeah, so The Lead is a summit for brands, for marketing, e-commerce, customer experience, and technology professionals at brands of all sizes, really. We're in New York City on May 20th and 21st on the Lower East Side, Pier 36. That'll be like the fourth year we're at that location. About 3,000 attendees, 2 days, 150 speakers. The stats and the website's probably in the link somewhere. But
it's very compressed.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of content, a lot of people in 2 days. So you get to meet a lot of folks in here.
That's great.
I will say as an operator, I love the conference because you really actually hear from people doing it and walking the walk. And I always feel like, you know, versus a lot of other conferences that are so high level, you know, people are talking strategy that you just want to know how they're actually executing. Right. You know, I think The Lead is a great conference because you hear how people are doing it. And these are really impressive people leading very big, impressive brands doing cool, innovative things. And so I love it as an operator to hear everything about how they're incorporating AI. But, you know, as Sonal mentioned, the unique stuff at The Lead where it's like, how are you bringing the teams along? How is this impacting culture? You know, how are you supposed to be strategic, but also be executing operationally? There's so much hardcore examples of how you can then implement various learnings into your own business that it's a really, really great conference, very unique in that way.
Thank you, Katie.
That's great.
I'll be attending before and after I speak as well.
Glad to have this moment to come together. And for all of you in the audience and those in the room, thank you so much. I'm Rick Watson. This is the Watson Weekly. Subscribe and share it with all your friends who still think 24 months is a good number for your fashion calendar. And I will see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.